Hello and welcome. I'm Dr. David Sabine, and you're listening to Real Life Talk with Doc Sabine. I'm a psychologist who spends every day working with people about the real struggles that they have in their lives, one-on-one. I've been privileged over the past years to hear many stories and to share in the narratives of many, many different people. I'm especially fascinated by those most important relationships that we share with loved ones, friends, and family. And today we have a very special guest I'm looking forward to talking to. His name is Mike Lurie. He is a parent, a journalist, a baseball fan, and author. So I know a lot of you listening are going to be cued in over one of those descriptors. The great American pastime is so entrenched in our culture that its verbiage is part of the language of many who have never seen a baseball game. His historical achievers like Jackie Robinson are pillars of social accomplishment. Most of us understand the concept of three strikes, home run, and the ball game is over in any context, but baseball is also a tool for building the bonds that last beyond a lifetime. Mike Lurie, our guest today, is an award-winning journalist with 25 years on TV and radio. Currently, he is the political and investigative reporter for CBS 13 in Sacramento, whereas On the Money reports provide an in-depth look at the connection between money and politics. As a television reporter in Florida, Lurie's five-part series on the Ku Klux Klan earned an Outstanding Achievement Award for investigative reporting from the UPI. Lurie lives in Northern California with his wife, Carol, and is the father of two children. Baseball Between Us is his first book. Mike, welcome to the show today.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
All right. Well, wonderful. Life is sort of reflected through many different aspects, and our relationships to family are certainly one of the most important ones to us. Baseball Between Us, I understand, is a true story about you and your father, as you guys made a road trip to visit every Major League Baseball stadium, 16 years, 13 ballparks, and 14,000 miles together. Now, are you the father or are you the son?
I'm the father.
Okay, you're the father, so this is with your son.
My son Matt is 22 now, awesome. And we started this trip when he was just five. You know, we went to baseball games when he was little. He really, really liked it. And as he got older, I saw that as a way to maybe not only build a little bit about the game of baseball, but also to build and forge a relationship, especially as a teenager, which, as you know, can be very challenging.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, one of the standard advices that I offer families as they're wanting to solidify the relationships with their children is to pick something you do with each child and make that your thing. You can do things collectively, make the vacations, watch the movies together, but something is unique to them. So this is center cut to the way I think about the parent-child relationship, and I'm anxious to hear more about this. So it came out of his intrinsic interest, and you followed up. At what point did you get the idea of this tour? Did it evolve, or was it like a flash of insight and said, we're going to do that?
You know, it was something that evolved over time. We went on our first trip when he was just five, visiting different parts of the country. We went to St. Louis and saw a Cardinals game, and the highlight for him, I think, at that point was the fireworks after the game. You know, he wasn't so much into the game, but as time went on, you know, I saw that he developed an interest, and by the time he was 16, I saw this as an opportunity to do a real father-son bonding, and I thought, well, let's do something, you know, life on the road, just the two of us together. We're only going to have each other in the ballparks, and so we flew to Detroit for our first trip and saw a Tigers game, rented a car, drove down to Chicago, saw a White Sox game, drove up to Milwaukee, saw a Brewers game, and then on to Minnesota to see the Twins play. And along the road, along the way, I started to see that, you know, this was a great way to sort of forge a relationship because you only have each other, and boy, oh boy, did we get into a lot of fights.
So you got both sides of a relationship. You got to work through conflict together, and you got to enjoy some wonderful scenes together.
Absolutely, absolutely. There were definite conflicts over things like, you know, bedtime and wake-up time and especially music on the radio.
Oh, my gosh. How did you solve that dilemma?
Well, we worked through it. It was not easy. With wake-up time, that was one of the hardest things because teenagers, as you know, like to sleep in. Mm-hmm. And especially during the summer, they don't want to be woken up for anything. And so, you know, when you have an agenda and, you know, you've got to drive 200 miles that day and you've got a ballpark and a game to see and things along the way that you want to try to, you know, show your kid, you know, you have to get up early and get up and go. Well, get up and go is not in the vernacular of most teenagers.
It's, yes,
I want to sleep in, I want to be under the covers and do my thing. And so that was a conflict, that was a fight.
Right.
And so was going to bed at night because, you know, there's one thing that, you know, kids don't like getting up early. They sure don't like going to bed early. And then the music on the radio thing, we were totally into different venues, different genres of music. He liked rap and I like rock and mm-hmm. never the twain shall meet.
Those are quite different genres.
Yes.
So did you alternate or did you have your way as the parent saying, okay, I've had enough of your son, we're going to listen to mine for a while? How did you work that out?
Well, at first we fought.
I see.
And, you know, I try to turn him on to some of my music, you know, some of the classic rock with, you know, the Allman Brothers and the Grateful Dead and
sure.
Jimi Hendrix and all of that. And he was just mildly underwhelmed, to say the least. And, you know, it was like, I've heard that all before. And I'm like, really? You've heard that great guitar work before? Well, I've heard music just like it.
Yeah.
And then he would start talking about his artists like Nelly and 50 Cent and, and others that I didn't relate to. And so we got into some discussions about that. But we had a funny thing happen, actually, that was a good bonding experience. In mm-hmm. our hotel in Milwaukee, we were there to see a Brewers game. Well, in the base or the lobby of the hotel, there is a plaque to Teddy Roosevelt, who was visiting Milwaukee many years ago when he was running for re-election as president. And
mm-hmm.
there was, you probably remember from your history books, there was an assassination attempt on Teddy Roosevelt,
okay.
A deranged man. Shot at him and actually struck him with a bullet while Teddy Roosevelt was speaking. Well, his speech was so thick and it was, you know, in his coat pocket that it actually stopped the path of the bullet, and although it hit him, it did not kill him.
Wow.
And the doctors decided that the best course of action was just to keep the bullet inside of him, and he actually survived the attempt and lived many, many years. But there was a plaque about that, and we had a great discussion, and a little bit of history along the road is always interesting. And I said, what a great, you know, thing that you've been able to go to this hotel, and this was a historic spot where something, you know, very tragic happened, but it was a great annal in American history. And he goes, Dad, what's the big deal? Teddy Roosevelt was only shot once, but Nelly was shot 9 times.
Quite a different perspective.
Way cooler.
Oh,
yeah.
That's something else. So obviously, both of your life experiences and the things that moved you were brought together in that car or on that plane as you went from place to place. I've noted, and others have noted too, that, you know, when the women folk get together, that they'll often say, let's go have some tea or have a cup of coffee, and they'll sit across from each other and they'll talk for 45 minutes about whatever is going on in their lives. But as men, we get shoulder to shoulder, and we get on the golf course, we climb under the car, we go hunting and fishing, and we experience a shared view of the world. So I can only imagine over 43,000 miles, you guys shared quite a lot of things together. So whatever your differences were, I suspect that you now have a whole wealth of shared experience to draw from.
Well, we do, and you're absolutely right. You know, when you're dealing with a teenager, you find that kids don't open up very much. They don't like to talk about things like girls or school or, you know, what's going on in their lives. But
mm-hmm.
I found that at the baseball game, they will talk about, you know, earned run average and batting average and on-base percentage and, you know, the important things in life.
Those things, yeah.
And but my point is that opens up a dialogue. That opens up a conversation. And the pace of baseball is something unique and I think
mm-hmm.
helpful in that regard because, you know, unlike any other sport, there's no clock.
Right.
So it takes its own pace. And in between innings, in between pitches, you have an opportunity to talk about, you know, what's the pitcher going to throw next? Are we going to see a hit and run?
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you think he'll steal here? You know, stuff about the game that you can talk to just get that dialogue going, get that conversation going. And then eventually as you build trust and you build an alliance and a relationship, you can kind of sneak in a question about, you know, well, you've got the junior prom coming up. You know, have you thought about taking somebody? And, you know, by that time, his defenses are down a little bit, and sometimes they open up and actually talk to you.
Awesome. And that's a great moment when you find you're really having a conversation there. Are either you and or Matt baseball players or more along just the fan line?
More really fans. I mean, both of us played, you know, Little League and youth ball and all of that.
Sure.
But didn't have the natural abilities to make it in the major leagues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my downfall was the curveball. Once that 12-year-old started throwing that was it for me. but you know, always developed a love for the game, and it actually started with my dad, and this is sort of the intergenerational thing.
Mm-hmm.
My dad took me to the 1963 World Series when I was just a youngster, and we got to see the Yankees and the Dodgers. And I grew up just an hour from Yankee Stadium in Connecticut. And my dad took me to the game. He had seats for game one. And, of course, that was back in the days when the World Series was played in the daytime.
Uh-huh.
So not only did I get to go to the game, but I got to skip school for the day. So
there
that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And so he took me to the game. And, you know, I was a big diehard Yankee fan. And Whitey Ford was on the mound for the Yankees. And Sandy Koufax pitching for the Dodgers. So it was one of the premier pitching matchups in World Series history. And I was absolutely convinced the Yankees were just going to run away with it. Well, that didn't happen. As luck would have it, that was the day that Sandy Koufax struck out 15 Yankees en route to a 5-2 victory for the Dodgers. He struck out Mickey Mantle, my hero, twice that game, and I cried all the way home. But I developed a lifelong, you know, passion and love for baseball on that day, and saw the value of, you know, spending the day at the park with my dad, and I wanted to one day do that with my own kid.
And now you've had that opportunity and took great advantage of it. As you can imagine, as a psychologist, there are all kinds of questions that pop into my mind that might not others, but will you say that going into this, that you and your son had a pretty normal father-son relationship, or did you think that there was distance you were trying to recover through this? Or was it just that in order to achieve a good, lasting relationship with him, you wanted to share these things?
Well, I think we've always been close. I have been very involved in youth sports as a coach, a baseball coach, basketball coach, soccer coach. So I was always his coach. And, you know, being the coach's kid is probably a good thing, but also it has a downside, too, because, you know, it's hard to for him to relate to the other members of the team because, you know, hey, your dad's the coach. But we always did have a good relationship, but we also developed some issues along the way that happened when, you know, kids become teenagers and they take on this sort of terrible teen persona.
Sure.
One of the things that happened is he decided somewhere in the middle of the trip, one of our trips, that he wanted to start calling me by my first name.
Okay.
So instead of, you know, okay, Dad, or, you know, let's go, Dad, it was, okay, Mike. Yeah, that's my name. But, you know, when that's your kid, you don't really want to be addressed that way.
Right.
Because, you know, but I saw exactly what he was doing. He was trying to, you know, cut me down and put me on a platform equal with him.
Yes.
And that was just part of the jostling that goes on, you know, as he's sort of trying to assert his own identity and all of that. So we had that issue of any time we'd go somewhere, you know, hey, Matt, time to get up. I'm not ready to get up, Mike. Well,
sure.
Now you got to deal with the insubordination.
Wow.
How do you deal with that issue?
Right.
So I just let him know in very no uncertain terms that, you know, I was the father and he was the child, and that was not cool with me. That was not okay. That was not respectful. And I really would prefer that he call me Dad. And he says, whatever, Mike.
It is hard to absolutely control those vocal cords, isn't it? We can get a lot of control over other things, but that's a tough one. How funny. Well, I imagine as years go forward that this experience together is going to be even more important to you and to him. And my father, who's 83, and I have shared maybe a seems like a million holes of golf together through the years since I was about three. And those times I learned about my father's temperament. I learned about his fears and his insecurities. And I know he's learned a lot about me. And that has been a crucible at times. It's forged things, and it's been a shared joy. And I can hear as you describe your trip and your time with him that it was both of those things, wasn't it?
Absolutely. It was a wonderful, enriching experience, you know, filled with just so many challenges and joys. And, you know, the baseball games were great, and we got to see, you know, a game in every Major League park, which was a dream come true. But I think the real value was just the shared experience of being on the road and traveling and experiencing new things and, you know, visiting different parts of the country and opening up to a whole new world. You know, in St. Louis, we got to visit the St. Louis Arch, you know, and go to the top of that and see how wonderful an architectural triumph that is. So in every little part of the country, I tried to find non-baseball venues that we could go to and visit and just open up a sense of geography. You read about it in a book, but, you know, that's one thing, but it's another thing to visit it.
Yes.
And it made a difference, I think.
That's great. Well, you're listening to Real Life Talk with Doc Sabine. My guest today is Mike Lurie, and we're going to take a break for just a minute, and we'll be right back to you. Welcome back to Real Life Talk with Doc Sabine. I'm visiting today with Mike Lurie, the author of the upcoming book, Baseball Between Us. He's publishing this book, this book is being published and will be out next spring, and you can read more about it at baseballbetweenus.com. Mike, as we move into the second half of the show here, I've loved the way in which our pastimes, our pleasures, our recreations many times will be a wonderful metaphor for the larger experience of life. I know that that's been true in terms of the golf game that I referred to a few minutes ago with my dad and what we played and what we did out there. And one of my other avocations, sailing, I know that there's a lot of great things in that that have taught me about life. As you've enjoyed and loved and shared the game of baseball with your son over these many, many miles and ballparks and games, what are some of the things that baseball seems to bring to your awareness and consciousness in perhaps a unique or important way?
Well, I think the thing about baseball is that it has so much in common with parenting. A lot of parallels there. Both have rules, both have right. tradition, and both have a boss. In the case of baseball, the boss is the manager, and in the case of a family, the boss is the parent. At least that's theoretically how it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in baseball, if the players become unruly or undisciplined, the manager, you know, takes the appropriate action. And similarly on the road, if your kid acts up in some way, you've got to find the right solution, the right path to
sure.
sort of instill the lesson and do it in a fun way. And, you know, we had a lot of incidents. You know, one time I remember talking to my son about he finally opened up to me and told me that he had a girl that he wanted to invite to, I think it was the junior prom.
Mm-hmm.
And he was trying to come up with ways to be creative to ask her about it. I said, well, tell me a little bit about this girl. And he said, well, it turns out she plays softball and she's a shortstop. And I said, that's great. You know, maybe you can come up with a baseball analogy, you know, like, you know, let's turn two together, or, you know, you're my diamond girl, or something like
uh-huh.
that. And of course, he rolled his eyes
uh-huh.
and just thought that was the lamest excuse, answer you could ever come up with. And
sure.
said, never mind, I'll just come up with it myself. So you don't always succeed, but, you know, baseball and parenting is, you know, at least you're trying. At least you get up to the plate and you swing away and you hope for the best. And
sure.
You know, whatever happens, happens. But the point is you want to maintain that dialogue. You want to maintain that conversation so that you at least have that rapport. One of the things that the trip provided was an opportunity for me to be vulnerable. And
mm-hmm.
when I say that, I mean to show that, you know, as a dad, I'm not always right. I'm not always the leader. Sometimes I make mistakes. And
mm-hmm.
one of the big mistakes that I made over and over again on the trip was getting lost.
Uh-huh.
I just have this horrible sense of direction, and invariably, in almost every major league city that we visited, I would find the wrong path, the wrong road, the wrong route to get to the ballpark or the hotel or what have you. We ended up getting lost so many times that my son started calling me Wrong Way Mike. So I can remember in Boston
yeah.
on the way to Fenway Park, you know, we had a hotel that was very close to the ballpark. I picked it on purpose so that we wouldn't have to drive. We could just walk there.
Mm-hmm.
And wouldn't you know it that, you know, we got there, you know, I wanted to get there early.
Mm-hmm.
And so we start walking to the park, and we notice that everybody's going the other way. And my son is like, well, Dad, everyone's going the other way. And I'm, you know, you can't admit you're making a mistake. You know,
no,
at least
of course
I thought
not.
That was the way to do. So I said, you know, well, I've got a shortcut to the ballpark. They don't know about it. Well, after about 10 minutes, I saw the traffic continuing the other way, and we were going nowhere fast. And finally, we hit a sign that said we were in the next town. So I knew we were in the wrong place. And, you know, my son looked at me like, you know, I can't believe you've done this. I followed you to nowhere. And we had to quickly turn around, and I put my tail between my legs, and we went to the ballpark. But
sure.
actually, that was a good thing in the long run, because it allowed my son to see that, yeah, parents do make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fathers are only human, and
right.
that allowed him to see me in a different light, that you know, we were learning together, and
absolutely.
That the trip was about making mistakes and learning from them and finding a path together. So that was a fun thing. We did
cool.
the same thing on a train in trying to get to New York, and ended up on the wrong train going the wrong direction
mm-hmm.
To New Haven instead of New York. You know, so once again, Wrong Way Mike did it again.
Sure.
And, you know, by that point, he was starting to get a chuckle out of it. And, you know, so that's what can happen along the
absolutely.
way.
Absolutely. And I've talked a lot of times with with my patients, and I've even dealt with my own kids around this issue of coming to see that your parents' feet are made of clay, that they make mistakes, and they've got their idiosyncrasies and quirks. And that really opens up something. It's like that colossal figure of parent sort of has to topple off the pedestal a bit so that the real parent, with all the foibles and the faults everyone else has, can really be loved in the way that we are. And so it's a good thing for us, even though we always, it seems to hurt a little when we make our mistakes. But it's also, right, I think, an awfully good thing. It occurs to me, as I've thought about your experience with your son and going to all these different ballparks over time, that in normal life, it's very easy for when conflict arises for everybody just to go to their separate corners and sort of get distance from one another. In a way, geographically and in terms of place, you're compelled to be in one place together even when the conflicts arise. And I would imagine that that comes with its own unique challenges. How did you guys manage the conflict? Was there one or the other that was more quiet, or did you agree on timeout, or how did you handle those when you couldn't get away from one another for time?
Well, you're exactly right. When you're on a road trip, there is no escaping each other. You're kind of stuck in the same hotel room, the same train, the same car, the same plane. Mm-hmm. And what Matt's way of dealing with that was to simply put on his plug in his iPod and put in his earphones and, mm-hmm. and tune me out, literally tune me out. Mm-hmm. And I realized that sometimes you need that, you know, that you need to have a distance and a space, you know, since there was no physical, you know, closing of doors or anything like that, you can't just leave each other. So I let him have his timeouts and do that, realizing that eventually he's going to have to talk to me, if for no other reason than to say, Dad, I'm hungry, you know, something like that. So you have that commonality and you have that common goal of, you know, we got to find a place to eat. We got to find a place to sleep. We got to get to the ballpark. So there's the sort of the same, you know, mantras that you have to repeat over and over that help you get through those moments and those challenges. But hopefully, you emerge, you know, stronger for it.
Absolutely, that's a great point. I also wondered as I was considering this work and this book that you've created. I'm an aspiring writer myself, and so I'm always interested in the process. Yeah, definitely an odyssey you undertook with your son, but it's also an odyssey to undertake to write a book. And I noticed that on the cover that it says with Matt. In what ways was Matt involved in the production of this book? Was it shared stories, or did he have writing responsibilities, or kind of how did that work, that collaboration?
Well, actually, it's both. He was obviously the inspiration for the stories, you know, and what I did is being a reporter, I brought a tape recorder with me and also a journal, and I wrote down things that happened during the day because I wanted to record conversations as accurately as I could to remember them, and so he inspired that, and I reminded him along the way that when he was acting up and being difficult, that I was going to write about it and the whole world was going to know about it. So that that was part of it. That was the ultimate revenge. But also at the end, as he got older and, you know, started, you know, now he's in college, he wanted to write an epilogue for the book to put his perspective as a son about what it was like traveling on the road with, with Dad. And he wrote a really beautiful epilogue that just encapsulates, I think, his feelings of growing.
Yes.
Along the ways, and how he saw my foibles and how, you know, my weaknesses, like getting lost. And then, you know, he said, but I matched that with my dad's, you know, strengths, like, you know, political discussions and political analysis and insight and that sort of things to overcome that. So you forge the bond, and he wrote some great things that I think will reach out and relate to a lot of young people who may be interested in reading the book.
Absolutely. Well, what is Matt about, and what's Matt doing now?
Well, Matt is a architecture student at USC in Los Angeles. He just finished his fourth year. He's about to enter his fifth year of the architecture program. He's getting his degree in that. It's a five-year program.
Sure.
And this summer, he's very fortunate. He's got a job working in Los Angeles for a small architecture firm, and he's helping to design and build houses and just loves it. And
how fun.
He's got one more year to go and, you know, just loves the field and the profession and has a real calling that has really emerged to him as something that he just loves doing.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Now, in my show, every episode we try to come to this point where we have a philosophy question. Long ago, in my relationship with my daughter, I wanted her to come to appreciate philosophy. In the town we lived in, we went to the local branch library, and I was going to show her the sort of the repository of human wisdom, as it was gathered under that title of philosophy. And I found the place on the shelf. It's in Louisville, Kentucky, and there was the word philosophy, and then below it there's eight empty shelves and one thin volume. And I just grieved so deeply. I said, okay, for the rest of my life I'm always going to try to get something in there to take us a little deeper, make us think about our lives in a little bit different way. And to, as a nod to the philosophers of the ages, let me ask this question of you. As you have completed this this journey with your son and completed the committing of that journey into the story form in this book, what do you draw from it? What are the takeaways that have been most precious to you personally in that process?
Well, I would say it's this, that baseball is a tradition that has been around for, you know, a long, long time, and it's something that can be passed like a torch from father to son or father to daughter within the family, and it helps to bind the generations together. And I found that along the road trip with my own son, that no matter how much we fought and had great arguments over, you know, wake-up time and bedtime and what are we going to eat today and do we really have to drive that far and I really hate your music on the radio, despite all of that, I found that we had baseball between us.
Yes.
That was the common denominator that we could always relate to. That was our little safety valve that we had, that no matter how much we were at war, at odds with each other, we always had baseball between us.
Awesome. Well, I have read with great enthusiasm a number of father-son memoirs. One of the ones that comes to mind is My Old Man and the Sea, about a father-son that built a boat of about 26 feet length and sailboat and sailed around Cape Horn. And I've read several others that have just meant so much. I'm looking forward to having the opportunity to read this and to take in this experience. I know that so many people that read it will resonate with the unique connection between father and son that seems to come around our passions. I know that daughters and fathers and daughters and moms, I know they do many great things together and love the things they do together. But I hear in your voice and in the way you talk about this and as the story unfolds, I hear it spoken so well about this particular bond and that how something out there is a shared experience ends up to be a great backdrop against which that relationship is forged. Tell us about its publication, when it's coming out, and where our listeners can get a hold of it when the time comes.
Sure. Well, Baseball Between Us will be coming out in March, March 1st to be exact. Next year, just in time for spring training and the new baseball season. So it's going through some final tweaks right now. I am self-publishing it. I formed my own company called Sloop Publishing to make that happen. And in the meantime, what I'm doing is I'm blogging about baseball all summer long, just fun things that happen along the way, interviews that I've had with players. I just got back from a baseball convention down in Long Beach, California. There's a group there called SABRE, the Society for American Baseball Research, and they had a lot of great players who were there. I ended up doing an interview with Wes Parker, who played with the L.A. Dodgers for many years and talked about baseball and his stories. So that's on there. There's some fun pictures, you know, from the road trip. And I'm hoping that that's something that, you know, fans everywhere can enjoy. For the pure baseball fans, there's going to be plenty of action along with interviews that we conducted along the road with Maury Wills from the L.A. Dodgers, Bernie Williams from the Yankees, Dave Stewart, who played with the Oakland A's and Toronto Blue Jays, and other players as well. But at the back of the book, something fun for the whole family that I call Baseball Bullets. And what it is bullet points, if you will, of fun places to go and visit in every major league city.
Excellent.
So that even if you're not the most diehard baseball fan, maybe mom just goes to the games, you know, to be part of the family. But there's fun things that she can do too in every city, museums, restaurants.
Right. So something for everybody, essentially.
Yeah, something for everybody.
Okay.
And that's there.
All right.
And so that will be coming out in March.
Very good. Well, it's been a delight to have you today. We've been talking with Mike Lurie. The name of the book is Baseball Between Us, and look for it next March. Mike, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
You're listening to Real Life Talk with Doc Sabine. We look forward to being with you next week.